quite difficult for speakers here. And with that, it gives me great pleasure to hand over to Barney, our second speaker tonight.
Thank you, Charlie, and thank you, Helen, and thanks everyone for being here. My name's Barney, and I'm a recovering addict.
Hi, Barney.
And I need to just get real and vulnerable and say that this is fucking scary, just for me being here. Just need to own that. You know, I think I so my heart's going. You know, I'd love to pretend that I'm not scared. I thought about doing that, but then I thought it'd be better just to own it and feel the fear and do it anyway. And you know, I think I, you know, when I was new around, I think I probably assumed that someone with 30 plus years clean would be sitting up here and just feel completely serene, almost like the Buddha or something, and would have attained some kind of spiritual height that would mean, I suppose, that you wouldn't feel anything at all. You'd be so serene, you wouldn't feel anything. And I feel something right now, and I know it'll be all right, you know. And, you know, I'm okay with one-on-one, and I'm okay with, I'm sort of reasonably okay with 1 on 20. I'm not so okay with 1 on you lot. So I just need to own that. You know, I know we're all here for the same reason, and in many ways we're all the same person, I think. And so I'm safe here. And ultimately, you know, I know that Narcotics Anonymous will survive no matter what comes out of my mouth. So it doesn't really matter at the end of the day. But I'm going to try and share. You know, I do have a sincere desire to share what's been given to me. I do have a sincere desire to communicate that, particularly to anyone who's new around. You know, it's very easy to forget what we feel like when we come around. You know, when you've been around a few years, even when you've been around a few months, you just forget how terrifying it is to come in, how fragile and freaked out and paranoid and ill at ease you feel. And I try to remember that. I really do. And so I really want to say to anyone who's new around, especially if this is like your first meeting, you know, please give this a go. You know, please give it a try. Because I was terrified and I didn't want to come, and I did everything all of us do. I came and sat at the back, and I didn't talk to anyone, and I ran the moment the meeting was over, and it's like I want to run now, really. But I didn't. I did what was suggested, which was to keep coming back. And I think I knew that that if I didn't keep coming back, there was nothing out there that I hadn't tried. There was nothing out there that wasn't going to lead to just terrible pain and destruction and self-destruction. And you know, I was ready. I was ready, you know, and I, so in that sense, I always think I was one of the lucky ones, you know, and I am one of the lucky ones, because I needed it then, and I need it now, you know. Thank God, you know, it's just not even an issue for me. I'm always amazed when I hear from people who've been back out there, and when they report back that they thought they didn't need this thing anymore. I mean, you know, 3 decades in, I just can't imagine living without this thing. I really can't handle my heart. That's no false humility. I need this thing. It's the single most important thing in my life. And I love it. I absolutely love what we have here. I think it's the most extraordinary thing that I really know of in the world. It's certainly the most extraordinary thing that I've ever experienced. It works. It works for anyone who wants it, genuinely. It doesn't necessarily work for everyone who needs it, but it works for anyone who really wants it and is prepared to just follow, I think, the simple suggestions. And I think you know, I always try and listen to the traditions when they're read out, and they are extraordinary. I mean, they are the ties that bind us together, and they have protected us from each other's madness for decades. You know, this thing withstands all sorts of attacks and dissensions and weirdnesses, and it's a remarkable thing. I always think, you know, when I'm... See, I prefer nice small meetings, and so, you know, that's mainly what I go to. And I recommend those, by the way. I really recommend those. I think this is fantastic. I think conventions are fantastic. But for me, actually what really helps me is a nice small meeting where there's a pretty good chance that I might have to share. And where maybe I've got some kind of commitment or some sense of kind of belonging, and I've got some part to play, and I really like that. And I always feel when I'm in a meet, when I'm my home group, I sort of have three regular meetings that I go to. One of them actually is a big meeting; it's the men's meeting, and I feel terrified even when I just open my mouth in that meeting, let alone doing the chair there, you know. But I always feel when people share in good NA. When an NA meeting is good, what you're hearing, somebody said this once, I thought it was a really beautiful thing, you hear somebody's higher self, you hear somebody's spirit, you hear somebody's, you don't hear, well, sometimes you do hear the defects and the madness, but actually what I always hear, if I'm listening, is the part of each of us that really wants to grow and that really wants love and wants to give love and all of that corny stuff. And I really hear it. And I hear it's like all the egos just sort of melt away. And, you know, we've all got egos, but this is really about, this is about something bigger than egos. It's about a power greater than self. And I need that, and I needed it then, and I need it now. I need a power greater than my, certainly need a power greater than my ego. But I really need a power, just, I need something bigger than me, and I need to be part of something bigger than me. And I am part of something bigger than me. You know, I am. Every time I walk into a room, and when I'm not in rooms, I'm always connected. You know, this is absolutely the platform on which my life is built. And, you know, I'm sure if my wife was sitting here and she heard me say this is the most important thing in my life, she would take umbrage. But it's still true, I'm afraid, because without this, I can guarantee you I will screw up my marriage. And I will screw up everything. I'll screw up everything, you know. And I, you know, one of the most important, I will probably trot out a few cliches in the next, you know, half an hour or so. And one of them, that, you know, one of the first really important things that I heard when I came in was, and I'm sure every one of you has heard it, but it's always worth saying again, which is that if you put anything in front of your recovery, you will lose it and you will lose your recovery. I'm sorry to use the you word, but... but it's worth kind of saying, I think, because that's just been my experience, you know. Fortunately, I haven't lost my recovery. But I have seen people go out chasing all sorts of things, usually substitute addictions. The most insidious and invisible one for me has always been work. Very potentially destructive addiction. So easy to justify. But I've seen so many people just chase ambition, and I'm nothing wrong with ambition, but when ambition turns into a ravening greed, and when it's just kind of me needing to fill the kind of void inside, it's just so pernicious for me. I have to be so careful of it, you know. My ego is it's like a wild animal, you know. It's never satisfied, it's never sated, it's always hungry, it's always looking for something to make it, to build it up, you know. Because my sort of core belief is that if my ego isn't sort of swollen, then I am somehow diminished. And of course, you know, what I've learned, at least intellectually, is that the opposite is the case, you know. And Anyway, drugs. I used drugs, and I didn't set out to be an addict. You know, this is just my little mini qualification. I really don't have a particularly, you know, hair-raising story. I didn't even use for that long. I came in to these rooms when I was 24 years old, and I was suicidal. I'd had enough. And so maybe I had a low pain threshold. I don't know. But drugs took me to some very dark and scary places, and I couldn't stop using them. And I tried to stop using them, and I found out that I couldn't. And finding out that I couldn't was, I suppose, basically realizing that I was an addict. And using with people who seemed to be able to take or leave drugs was very scary for me. My life and thinking very rapidly became centered in the getting and using. You know, it really doesn't matter what drugs you used or any one of us used. You know, because we all have different metabolisms and different chemicals do different things for different people. You know, opiate drugs seemed to do something for me that I certainly couldn't do for myself, which was just to feel okay in my own skin. And I don't think I had ever felt okay in my own skin till really honestly the first time I ever took heroin. And so that was it for me. I was sort of, I never imagined that I would ever take that drug. You know, it was like this ultimate kind of bogeyman in my head. Yet nonetheless, I did. I found myself one day with a friend, I took it, and it was like, I thought, I don't ever not want to feel like this, because I feel cocooned and impregnable, and I feel like nobody can hurt me. And I, you know, and so that's what I chased for a few years in combination with other things. And it was scary not being able to get away from these things, and it was scary to be utterly powerless over the compulsion to return to them again and again and again, and to find that my life was just whittling down to sort of nothing except the drugs, really. I was using. I wasn't using in order to write. I wasn't using in order to socialise. I wasn't using in order to do anything other than use. You know, it became an absolute end in itself. And you know, I think I understand a little bit better now why I needed to feel so kind of safe and wrapped up in the arms of particularly opiate drugs. And I think, you know, it had a great deal to do with not ever having felt held by anyone, really. You know, I always say that I felt, you know, in some really rather twisted way, I felt kind of loved by drugs, you know. I certainly couldn't allow myself to feel loved by anybody else, you know. And so I felt, I mean, all I really felt was nothing really mattered when I was using, and that's what, you know. And when I wasn't using, everything mattered terribly. Everything mattered too much. And, you know, I mean, when I put down the drugs and came into recovery, everything started to matter again terribly, you know. And that's frightening. And you feel so raw and like you somehow, you've been unpeeled, I think. And, you know, and I just felt, for the first few months of recovery, I felt so, so self-conscious and just racked with self-consciousness. And it's interesting. Last night I went to a gathering in a pub in Islington. And it was a bunch of people I used to work with years ago. And I used to feel so ill at ease around both. Well, I felt kind of like, you know, when I was using around them, I was just full of shame and secrecy. But when I put the drugs down, I found it so hard. I used to go into this office, and I felt so consumed with myself and so unable just to have, like, normal conversations. I'm sure we can all relate to this. First few months of recovery, I could never hear what anyone was saying to me because I was so consumed with what I was going to say next to them. There's some laughter of identification. Good, I'm not alone. Well, anyway, I mean, the nice thing is to be able to say that 30-odd years on. You know, I went to this thing last night. Lots of the same people. And I just felt so okay. I just felt so absolutely okay. I didn't have to prove anything. I didn't have to say anything. I didn't have to be anything that I'm not. And, do you know, in a weird way, I mean, I was probably the only person there not drinking. Everyone else was, you know, four sheets to the wind. But I felt like I was the life and soul of the party. It was just bizarre. And I thought, you know, it's really nice to be able to kind of measure change in ways like that and just feel, you know, really, really... And people were so incredibly loving and affectionate. And, yeah, it was good. It was good. And I think, you know, in a way, I don't feel like that all the time. I need to emphasise that. I don't. I mean, I have days of just feeling, well, you know, it's very easy for me to regress to feeling all the things that we feel in recovery when we don't medicate ourselves, you know. But what I would say is that little story about me going to this thing last night, I mean, that's what's on offer here. That's what I'm selling tonight. I'm selling it on behalf of Narcotics Anonymous. I'm telling you that it has worked for me, that it has changed me into somebody who isn't consumed with shame and fear and crippling self-consciousness. That I can walk into a room full of, you know, well, strangers actually, and I'm just, it's just okay to be me. Now, if you told me that that was ever going to be, was ever going to be okay just to be me, I would have thought that was extremely unlikely, you know. And I think, you know, one of the important things to acknowledge is that when I came into the rooms, I didn't know who I was. I mean, it was impossible for me to be, for it to be okay to be me, because I didn't know what me was. I didn't have the faintest clue what me was. I had spent so many years, probably most of my life, pretending to be something different. Some things that, you know, just anything that I thought would, I suppose, just get some kind of acceptance. You know, I desperately wanted to be loved all my life, but I never understood, it never occurred to me, that the most lovable people on earth are the people who are just themselves. Okay, I mean, I wasn't given that as a kid, either by my parents, or by teachers, or by friends. You know, I was intensely anxious about what other people thought of me, and just always ill at ease. You know, it was never okay just to be where I was. You know, something better was always happening somewhere else. You know, and that awful sense of, not really sure what the word is, but that, you know, when you live your life like that, that I should be somewhere else. This isn't right. I shouldn't be me. I shouldn't be here. I shouldn't have this face. I shouldn't be wearing these clothes. I shouldn't be driving this car. I shouldn't have this job. I shouldn't be with this woman. I shouldn't. It's no way to live. That's all I know. It's no way to live. And I think what I would say is that slowly through my recovery, with the help of, well, a number of things, the steps, some therapy, a lot of just talking with people I trust. You know, it's like you go into a kind of tunnel and you go in as this sort of quivering wreck, terrified, self-obsessed individual. And maybe you sort of come out the other end with at least the belief that it should be okay to just be who you are, right? You know, and sometimes it is, you know, sometimes it is. And I think that, I mean, a big part of me getting to know me was definitely the steps, and specifically steps 4 and 5. You know, that was really the first time I took a, you know, it was like taking a really good look in the mirror and like, fuck. That's who you are. That's how you tick. That's how you feel. I mean, I've heard it a million times in the rooms. You know, I started out with step four, and I thought there'd be 20 names, 20 resentments on it, you know. 3 months later, 8 pads of, you know, notepads. You know, I was just... I mean, it's amazing how we can come into recovery and not realise how many of these things we're dragging around behind us. But what a relief. I mean, it's really okay to have all those resentments. It's just... the good thing is to just come to terms with them and recognise them and own them. And it was... Yeah, it was a real... I mean, it was such a revelation to me to come out of that process with a sense that, you know, that warts and all, defects and all, shame and all, that I was loved by the guy who heard me. My sponsor heard me, and he never once sort of went, "Ugh, that's gross." You know, and I really did share, as we all have to, I guess, stuff that I just... Oh, I thought another human being would never hear, you know. And there's nothing new under the sun, I'm told. And that helped me, you know. Anything that I think is uniquely revolting about me and shameful about me, you can guarantee that numerous other people have done those things. And, you know, I think on the back of that, one of the things that's helped me most in my recovery is... it's this idea that whatever I'm feeling, it's okay. Whatever I am feeling, it is absolutely okay. Okay? It doesn't matter. I mean, it doesn't... If I've got, like, homicidal feelings towards somebody, it's okay. You know, it really is. It's what you do with the feelings. That's all. That's all it is. But I mean, I've just consumed so much energy in my life just thinking, God, if people knew I was feeling... I shouldn't be feeling this. I mustn't feel this. And it doesn't do me any good at all. It doesn't do me any good at all. I have to allow myself to feel whatever it is I'm feeling. And then I can think about what it is and what it means. And maybe I can share it with other people. And then maybe not act on it. You know, maybe not end up killing somebody. You know, that's always good. You know, what I would say is... I have just kept coming. I mean, I'm a creature of habit. As my wife would tell you if she was sitting here today, she might even use the word boring about me and my habits. But some of my habits, I believe, have kept me clean, and are the reason that I'm sitting here today. And I make no apology for being boring about the stuff I do. You know, I do religiously come to meetings, and I pray every morning and I pray every night, and I've just done that for 30 years. It's worked for me, and I'm not going to fuck with the formula. You know, I have a chat with my higher power in the mornings. I mean, I don't know what my higher power is. I don't, you know, I'm not a religious man. I just talk to the universe. I talk to some kind of spirit. I have to believe in some kind of spirit. You know, just believing in a completely materialistic universe doesn't help me. It really doesn't, because I just don't, for me, a life which is just measured in sort of numbers and statistics, and there's no life at all. I like the mysterious stuff. I like the stuff that you can't quantify and you can't take to the bank, you know. I do believe the best things in life are free. I really do. You can have all the money in the world, but it won't buy you love. You know, the Beatles weren't the only ones to know that. But it's just the truth. You know, I believe that this program is about nurturing my spirit. And, what is it? It's just that spirit is... it's just everything that isn't logical and pragmatic and about... You know, it's about what makes life worth living. Because if all we do is just sort of work and I don't know, pay the bills, and to me there's not much point to it. So every day, my spirit is hungry for just the stuff that the incidental stuff, the laughs. You know, I mean, I'm not going to pretend to you that every day is fantastic, because it just ain't, you know. I still struggle with life. I find life difficult. I suspect I always will. I also suspect that it isn't easy for anyone, you know. And I think it's very easy to spend your life thinking, it's so easy for him, because look what he's got. Or it must be so easy for her, she can't have a care in the world. Well, you know, I think it's probably nonsense. You know, I don't think there's anyone. It doesn't matter how much money they got or how famous they are or how unfamous. You know, we're all really struggling with the same basic stuff every day. You know, trying to make the same choices and decisions and trying to find some kind of meaning and purpose. And, you know, the older I get, the more every day I sort of, think about what does it all mean? What am I doing here? Is there any point to my being here when I know it's going to end? All that stuff. I mean, to me, it's important to think about those things. I can't just blunder through life. I need to sort of have a sense of, I don't know about purpose. I don't know, maybe that's not the right word, but just a sense of what makes it worthwhile. And I know what makes it worthwhile for me, and it's kind of loving and being loved. It's reaching out, having people reach out to you. It's what we do here. Meetings are always a highlight of every week for me, because they're just a chance. You know, one of the things that sort of goes around my head every day, you know, there are certain things that just go around and around. It's like a bloody washing machine, really. And I wish it wasn't, but it just is. You know, there's just financial insecurity, there's a sense of disappointment in myself, there's a sense of things that are, you know, difficult things domestically that are happening. And in amongst that is just, it's a sort of like, you know, grumpy old sort of git kind of reaction to the bizarre world we're living in now. You know, I mean, I everything has changed so much, and just in the time I've been around recovery, I find it very difficult just to cope with, you know, the fucking internet and text messages and emails and just the bombardment. I mean, I run an internet business, and yet I think the internet is the root of all evil. Most days, you know. And I'm sort of obsessed with the damage that it's doing to the human soul. And I say that in all seriousness. But I have to accept the world that we're in now, and I have to accept the way it's changed. I have to accept that probably not going to, you know, we're not going to reverse this stuff. But I need to find a way every day to stay sane with all this stuff, actually. I mean, and I really do. And I've had to be very, very disciplined about unplugging from the grid. And I mean, this is part of my recovery. It's why I'm sharing it. It's not in any of the steps, but it's just about what I struggle with, and I do struggle with it. And for me, every day I need some time where I'm not doing stuff. It's really, really important. And I was going to say, that's what led me on. One of the things I really love about meetings, what makes them so precious, increasingly precious for me, is that I just sit there for an hour and a half. And I'm not doing anything other than just absorbing and listening to you, listening to others. What a priceless gift that is. It's fantastic. It's the best therapy for me. It takes me out of my self-obsessed, self-consumed head. I start to think about other people and what's going on for them. And I say, oh yes, of course, there are other people in the universe. And I've totally forgotten that. And some of them are going through much, much more difficult stuff than I'm going through, you know, which is great. I mean, it's not just like, cheers, thanks for sharing your suffering, I feel so much better, see ya. But I mean, you know, it really helps me. And of course, there's some people who things are going better for them, and that's great too. I get to hear I get to hear problems, I get to hear solutions. But above all, I get to step out of this head, you know. And I really need to step out of this head, you know. So, you know, 5 minute summary of, I can't really summarize 30 years. It's been a roller coaster ride. It's been ups, it's been downs, it's been magical, hysterical, hilarious moments. It's been suicidal troughs, and everything in between. And I think it sort of leveled out a little bit. But I'm not going to sit here and I mean, there's just no point in me telling you that, you know, hey, when you get to 30, everything is just, you're just cruising. I'm sorry. But do you know what? It's still worth coming back. Because it's a terrific adventure. It's a terrific ride, I think, you know. And I suppose I'm naturally of a sort of, probably naturally of a depressive and self-destructive bent, if I'm really honest. So a lot of recovery is really about kind of not going there and curbing that instinct to destroy myself. You know, I think at the core of probably all of us is a very deep, you know, because I don't think you can ever really repair that core damage. I mean, that's just me. That's just for me, you know. And we all come from very different walks of life. We have very different experiences. But I think right at the core of me is a profoundly unloved being who has slowly but surely allowed others to come in and love him. But I'm not sure I'll ever be 100% convinced that I deserve love or I'm lovable. You know, I think some kids really are. I think, you know, not that many, not in this world, but, you know, but I know people who just, like, they've never really doubted that they're lovable, you know. I mean, because it was just instilled in them from the word go. You are just great the way you are, no matter what you do. But I think I probably struggle with that a little bit every day, you know. But I know at least that that's, to me, that's the core problem. That's it. That's what I have had to come to terms with in the steps, in therapy, and in all the sharing that I do. Is because everything, all the mad shit we do in recovery is about running away from that and denying it and pretending it's not true instead of just feeling it and you know, and crying a lot and getting in touch with it. I think it's really important. And maybe when I really got in touch with it, I sort of stopped thinking that, oh, I don't know, in my case, writing a bestseller was going to change me. Or you know, or making this amount of money, or going out with that woman, or, I mean, you know the options. They don't seem to work for anybody. That's the bad news. But they don't, actually. Anyone who's achieved anything in recovery will tell you it might have made them feel great for about 10 minutes. But it didn't fix the core issue. And the only solution to that core problem of the little unloved self is a spiritual one. And it's what we have here. It's what we do here. It's what we share here. And that's why I keep coming back. Thank you.